Hello and welcome to the Wonder What podcast. My name is Rob.
And I'm Robbie.
And we're here. Why are we here, Robbie? We're here again. Why?
Well, this is a surprise to you, but we are starting officially season two.
Season
two? In 2019 of all the stuff going on at Eastgate. This is our Eastgate podcast.
And we made it to two seasons.
We have.
I feel like we should get a prize.
I do too. And I first want to apologize, though. I know we have our four listeners out there, but we're sorry that it's been so long. I have had one or two of you ask me if another one was ever going to happen again.
So two out of the four.
That's right.
Listeners care.
So we apologize to you two.
Yes, the two of you.
It took us so long. Our last one was in November, which we felt pretty dang good about that we were able to do that after the hurricane.
I think it was impressive. We were pretty busy back then.
Yes.
And not then, that we're not busy now, but
right.
Still.
Well, and then Christmas came after that. And so I thought, well, after Christmas, we'll do it after Christmas. And then my mom got sick, actually, in early January.
Yeah, and we got sad news to talk about, don't we?
We do.
So go ahead. Do you want to?
Well, my mom passed away January 18th. And my dad, my stepdad, is living with us now. So we've had a lot of changes in our life.
And a bit of an upheaval.
Yeah. I mean, it was hard, but I'm grateful that it ended as it did. We all had time to say goodbye to her, and she passed peacefully in her sleep, and she loved the Lord, and that is something I am always going to be grateful for.
That puts everything in perspective. When something like this happens, if we have a sense of eternity,
yes,
this, it changes everything. We don't grieve as those who have no hope.
Right. And you talked about her a little bit yesterday in your fourth study in the book of Mark that we're going through now.
Very good. I had no idea how many I'd been doing.
It was the fourth.
All right.
And that's part of my job too. I upload your sermons and I number them. And you can hear some of my mom's testimony that you share in that message, which was very touching. And again, I just, if you knew my mom as long as I did, you just know how incredible it was that she did come to the Lord.
Yeah.
And there was just a lot of evidences of it as we unpacked her apartment and that kind of thing.
And before that, too. I mean, obviously, she
yes.
was very... Ruth Peterson was telling me about how they had gone out to lunch at one point, and that's when it was really first hitting home with your mom, the changes that had taken place with her. And all of a sudden just got all excited saying, that means we're sisters now, right?
Aww.
We're sisters. And Ruth was saying, yes, we are. And your mom was like, well, let's dance. So they started dancing in the parking lot of Applebee's.
I love it. People have shared a lot of great stories with me since she's passed of some of their favorite memories. And it's been really helpful and touching. And I appreciate that. So yes, those are our apologies for why this has been as long as it has been. Again, I still feel pretty good we're doing it now.
I'm impressed. Anytime we do anything outside,
we impress ourselves.
So at least we may impress two out of the four. That's probably pushing it.
Maybe one.
One out of the four. If we can get a one out of four impressed, then we'll be stoked.
It's a good thing.
So what else is going on, Robbie? What are we here? What are we talking about today?
Well, one thing we always like to cover is any new small groups that are going on. And a lot has changed since the hurricane. I can't remember if we were at one service. Yeah, I think we were.
I think. Weren't we still meeting outside? Or
that's possible.
In November? I feel like we were 5 weeks out in the courtyard. So it's possible that we were still meeting outside. And I think we were talking about it was 2 weeks before we got the... So in positive things, we got the building put back together. We've still got some air conditioning issues. Yeah,
a couple of windows
still missing, but 2 weeks, they'll get that done.
That's right. Well, the electricity coming back on was huge. There was much rejoicing after that moment.
Absolutely.
And we were very grateful. It just felt like forever. I think it was at least six weeks. Is that what you just said?
I thought it was like 5 weeks, but maybe it was six. I don't, me and numbers, I don't know.
Well, it felt like a long time, and we started even at like half power, where just the coffee house had some power, and eventually, so the point is that when we came back and started meetings again, we went to one service.
We realized that we liked it. We like one service.
We did.
It's actually a lot of fun, and it's nice to have us all in one big group. I think that's what struck me more than anything.
I think there was such a familial sense with all of us hanging out together at the courtyard. We'd all been broken and hurting and were in survival mode. And the thought of splitting us back up just felt wrong. And so, and plus, to be honest, several people had to leave the area. We lost two staff members almost right away. And so we thought, well, maybe we can fit. We did order 50 more chairs. So we figured we did need a few more chairs. And it's mostly full.
I sat down at one point and started kind of going over the families that I knew of for sure that had left since the hurricane. And I stopped at 10. I was just like, that's actually, that represents a lot. And I know I wasn't covering everybody at that point. So,
and some may be temporary. I don't know. They talked about they had to leave until their home was repaired and they may come back. But we're enjoying one service. So as a result of one service at 10 o'clock, now we have started that was my long way around of talking about small groups, two Sunday morning 9 a.m. small groups.
Yeah.
Before church, because one side effect of going to one service is the youth groups couldn't meet on Sunday morning anymore because there was only one service. They used to meet middle school first service. I was going to say first period. Back to school.
Same diff.
And the high school met second service. So that couldn't really happen. So now middle school meets at 9 in the morning, and high school meets Sunday nights at 6 or 6:30.
6 o'clock.
Something.
I believe it's 6 o'clock. I believe so. You would think we would know, but
we don't have any high schoolers anymore, so it's hard to keep track. And so anyway, since a lot of parents have to be here anyway to bring their kids to middle school group, we thought it would be a good idea to start a couple of meetings. And Lance Ford is doing one, Missional Essentials class.
It's been a fun class. I've been taking that class.
Yeah.
And it's been a real great discussion time of going over, you know, our mission. Actually, and I love the way he words this, it's not that the church has a mission, it's that God's mission has a church. So you're going over the mission that God is about in advancing the kingdom of God, and how we can begin thinking differently about our neighborhoods, about our homes, recognizing our calling to those places, about our workplace, all of that. So,
which is all very timely post-Hurricane Michael.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about wanting to be hands and feet and help, you know, our brother and sister, our neighbors, everybody after
and
that.
Honestly, that's what's come up a lot. I mean, the idea of being more effective in interacting with other people because of the hurricane. It's actually broken down a lot of barriers. It's a whole lot easier to
that's awesome.
To talk to people, to pray with people. It's amazing how natural and unawkward it feels to me to be talking with somebody and hearing their story in the doctor's office the other day, and you know, hearing all the things that are going on, and it just seemed natural. Just, well, can I pray for you? Can I pray for what's
this? That's awesome.
And nobody yet has said, oh, no.
Right.
So it's been good.
As difficult as Hurricane Michael was and continues to be, it's not by any means over the effects of it anyway. It is incredible what a unifying force it became for our community, our neighborhood, our county. I just feel like it did do a lot to break down barriers. One of the places I work is a medical office, and it received some damage. We've still been able to see patients once we got power back, especially. Well, we saw it before power. We used a generator in the back door for the first week. But we have tarp over the inside of our ceiling in there, and insulation falls down in the hallway, and nobody complains.
That's free of charge, too.
That's right.
Nobody has to pay for extra insulation in their bandages or anything like that. It's really nice.
Hey, but the point is, no one complains because everyone knows that at least our doors are open. They're very grateful. And I think if it was just one medical clinic like that, whereas many, many doctors close their practices altogether, like it's time to retire. And so we were grateful that we could, you know, be open. And again, that's just another evidence of the community aspect.
Yep. That's very cool. The other small group that's going on at that time is LaDonna Broadstreet is doing what's it called?
I don't know if they have.
Is it Rewind or is it?
Oh, did she have an official name?
I thought it was. Isn't that terrible that I'm not?
Again.
I think it's Rewind. Because what they're doing is they get together and they talk about the message that was taught on Sunday morning the previous week. So they can go over the Wonder What post.
I was going to mention. If anybody doesn't know that we have a podcast,
Nope.
Anybody doesn't
know,
we have a blog.
Four of you know that there's a podcast, but we do have a blog. I write a blog every week.
Yeah, and you kind of give a preview of the upcoming sermon and then some questions for thought. And I think the group can use those. I don't know if they are. I can't do either group. I'm sorry. I'm always running around.
I wasn't able to make it all the way through.
Sorry, I had to pull you out.
Last group. But yeah, but you know, if you're interested in getting to know some more people, having discussions about these kinds of things, mm-hmm. get there a little early on Sunday morning and hang out with one of these groups. It's pretty awesome, really.
It is. It really is. And I was glad to have the opportunity. Several people over the years have asked about meetings before the church started. We're like, well, you know, we have 9 and 11. Would you come to a meeting at 8? And not a lot of people want to come quite that early. So I think this is a good opportunity to.
It's kind of like, you know, those who are used to being there at 9 o'clock anyway.
Right.
That works out.
So those are the main newest small groups. I think all the other ones are still pretty much going. The women's breakfast was Janelle's and my thing, and that's not, we haven't been able to pick that up yet.
But the men's breakfast happens every last Saturday of the month at 9 o'clock in the corner coffee house area. And then the women's group led by Julie Higby right now, and she's actually going through the Missional Essentials teaching as well.
On Sunday night.
So
one Sunday a month.
Yeah. Hopefully we're getting our thinking reoriented towards something that expands beyond a Sunday morning service. The Sunday morning services are great, but there's more to this. There's more to life. There's way more purpose than just that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So that's pretty much all the Eastgate updates and news. Did you have any other, like, other church news? You kind of stay in contact with what's going on out there in the church world?
Well, you know, yeah. You read articles all the time. I read articles all the time. But honestly, it's just depressing. Everything right now that I could come up with would be bad news. There's bad news everywhere. If anybody wants to hear the bad news, there's bad news out there for the church
really
at large.
Not new stuff.
And it's high profile things. It's not, you know, this is not representative of the church. It's not representative of the other churches that are like Eastgate that are definitely familial communities that are, you know, seeking God and seeking to learn how to love.
Those don't make the news.
No, they don't. But what does make the news is another high-profile megachurch pastor is fired because of abusive leadership practices. And there's scandals within the Southern Baptist Convention of cover-ups of sexual abuse. And it's a difficult thing, you know. It's not even like the Catholic Church. People will look at the Southern Baptist Convention and say, well, you know, they're just as bad as what's going on with the Catholics. But you have to understand that it's not even in the same, it's two different games. You're comparing baseball to football. They're completely different things that are going on. You're basically, with the Southern Baptist Convention, you're still talking about, much like Calvary Chapel, autonomous groups, autonomous churches that, you know, they still are part of this larger thing, but there's not as good of a policing ability within a large group of autonomous affiliated groups that are autonomous. So it's a difficult thing to deal with. It really requires that there's got to be integrity within the leadership of every given church
and accountability, I think,
and
too.
Prayer that God will preserve and change our hearts so that this kind of stuff, you know, that we exemplify what the kingdom of God is about and not the fallenness of our human existence. But then what's the other news? Oh, well, United Methodist Church, I think, is facing us. But it doesn't matter. Let's move on because that's all depressing stuff. So,
well, the only other thing that I was thinking about was letting people know that we still are getting phone calls and emails somewhat randomly since the hurricane from other churches that do want to from outside the area that still do want to help with Hurricane Michael. And they're saying, you know, we have some money, we've collected some money, who can we help? And they want to know the stories of the people that have been affected by the hurricane.
Had a great talk with a pastor out in Fort Walton. It's not affiliated with Calvary Chapel or anything like that. He just had gotten my name he's got a good relationship with Neil Spencer. And so I had a great conversation with him, but it was really beautiful just to see how there's still such a heart to want to help.
That's awesome.
It is. And I think one of the things that would be incumbent on us as a church and things to pay attention to is to keep reminding people about what's going on in Haiti.
Yes,
I'm bummed about
the
fact that doesn't get a lot of news
coverage. I've never seen it in the news at all. The only reason I know anything about it is because Dr. Kim was going to is planning at this time still going there at the end of March, but there's incredible political turmoil there right now.
It's terrible. And the people are in, you know, the Haitian people are in such terrible straits. So any way in which we can find, we know of one organization for sure, the one that, that Kim works through, and well, two organizations, Living Word Haiti as well, who we support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to think in terms of how we can help and support and definitely be praying for our brothers and sisters there and the people of Haiti.
Well, they've laid it out how we can help already in a lot of ways, and that is by sending money, you know, through a trusted organization that will support the locals, because the price of food, for instance, is
like
more than
it?
Tripled, quadrupled. Yeah. It's ridiculous. They don't have very much there, and what they have is
out of
unaffordable.
Reach. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Dr. Kim, who normally goes over there on a medical mission, if they're even going to be allowed in the area, may end up just distributing food, because that's the biggest challenge right now is they don't even have any food unless something will change before then. So
be sure to pray for Haiti.
Yes.
How I marvel at all the things that I can't understand. And oh, how I marvel at all the things that I won't understand. If it's God's work, amen, it's so great.
Hey, Robbie, you know how awesome it is that we have so many people that volunteer at Eastgate?
I know, they make things work.
They do. I mean, the fellowship, the Sunday morning meetings would not happen if we didn't have people getting involved and giving their time and their expertise to help out. And
we totally appreciate that, too.
We really do. And so if you're interested in volunteering, we need volunteers all the time in Kidsgate. And don't you need them back in the media room?
I always do. We're very shorthanded right now in the media room. And if you want to come back there and hide with me,
if you're
join
an introvert
me.
And you don't want to have to talk to people or shake hands or anything like that, you can hide in a dark room.
Join us
and
in the nerdery.
At a computer screen.
It's
just like being in mom's basement. So there's that. There's soundboard. There's all kinds of places where
greeters. If you're an extrovert, I've heard there's people like that.
There are people like that that enjoy smiling at other people, other human beings. They don't even
awesome.
Have to tell themselves, "Hey, humans are supposed to smile at somebody else."
That's
they
right.
just do it naturally.
They're awesome.
So yeah. So soundboard. There's all kinds of different ways. If you're interested in volunteering at Eastgate, you can just drop a line to eastgatepcb@gmail.com and just indicate that you're interested in volunteering. And if there's a specific area that you'd like to volunteer in, say Kidsgate or Media Room or Sound Tech, and we will get you pointed in the right direction.
Enjoy it.
Yes, enjoy it. That's a command. Enjoy it.
Yes, we would love to have you and appreciate your help already. So volunteer, I have a couple in mind that I'd like to mention.
All right.
And that is Miguel and Amanda Camacho. I was going to say Amanda. Amanda Camacho.
Now that we've butchered their names,
sorry.
We're
going to
celebrate them. We celebrate everything about
awesome.
Them, including
we're
their
not.
Names. No, but Miguel and Amanda, they are amazing, beautiful people. What a beautiful family that is.
Yes. They're so great. He works at the front desk.
At the Kidsgate.
At the Kidsgate front desk with check-in. He also helps with security.
And then he's just recently volunteered to see to it that the building's shut down.
That's actually so nice. We have one person, Mike Baker, we've mentioned before. He comes and gets there before everybody and opens the place up. And we've had a few people here and there that have wanted to help, but it just never like remained consistent or whatever. So typically you and I are one of the last people there, which is fine.
Sure.
You know, but now it's kind of like you guys leave so Miguel can close up. And it actually kind of makes it nice because we don't have to be the last persons out the door.
Persons out the door.
Yeah.
And
I'll
tell you, and there's just, you know, and so we had somebody who was struggling with some personal issues, wasn't ready to leave the building yesterday. And my daughter was in town from Jacksonville and I kind of had to go. And I was thinking about just kind of letting him stay there and walk, you know, lock it up. It locks by itself anyway.
Mm-hmm. On the way out.
And Miguel, man, just a big-hearted guy, just said, I'm going to hang out here with him. I was going to make sure he's okay.
And I just want to mention they have four children.
Yeah.
Who just so hang out like they, with him.
It's not like they don't have anything to do.
Right.
But they've just got such big hearts, hearts to serve, and are just a beautiful example of Christ at work in the community at large.
Yes.
And I love it. They're I love
awesome,
them.
Awesome people.
So if you ever see Miguel and Amanda, give them a high five. Give them a high five from us. Well, that'll be four of you. So four strangers come up to
please
them.
Please do it. If you need to know who they are, we'll point them out to you.
So, Robbie, yeah. What are some things do you think that people may not know about Eastgate that we could share with them?
Well, we may have mentioned this before, but I wanted to say that Eastgate has had the same pastor since 1992. Is that when it started?
Nope.
Eastgate has had the same pastor since it started in what year, Rob?
1995.
Oh, 92 is when we moved down here.
Yeah.
So 95. And the only reason I wanted to bring that up, and again, people may already know that, is you had mentioned it the other day as sort of an apology.
It is
you
an
do
apology.
Sometimes.
I am so sorry.
When you
I'm
opened
so
up the Book
everybody.
Of Mark and you talked about it, you were, what?
No, I didn't know what you were saying. Okay.
When you opened up the Book of Mark and yeah. You talked about that.
You made it sound like I imagined myself walking up to one of those high pulpits and he opened up the Book of Mark.
Well, opened up the studies, began the series in Mark. But anyway, the point is, because you must have researched that a little bit, you were apologizing because it's your second time through the Book of Mark and you looked up the stats on how long people are usually pastors of the same church. Is that it? Or
yeah.
ever pastors?
Yeah, all okay. of it, all together. The pastor of the same church or pastor in that capacity of ministry for any length of time. And so what did I read? I can't remember now. It was like
seven years
was average for being in the ministry altogether.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that's right. 7 years was... No, 12 years. 12 years for a single
total
church.
Ministry. To, oh.
No, 12 years. But 7 years on average for total ministry.
Wow.
So like a lot of guys, I guess, get in and then get out. Or
yeah.
Guys or girls. Men or women.
There we go.
I'm trying to, you know, men, women or
well,
men.
Correct. There we go. But it was funny because when you brought that up, it was your apology by saying, I'm sorry, this is the second time we're going through the Book of Mark because I've already covered all the New Testament books since I've been here for so long.
Yeah.
But I thought people had a very sweet reaction to you saying that. They started clapping.
I don't understand that.
And you said, oh, no, that's not why I did that.
I don't, I think it, I don't know. I get embarrassed about weird things, but that seems... I just feel bad. There should be, we should have found somebody better by now. I've been waiting for the real pastor to show up and fix this whole thing. And that person has not arrived yet. And I'm sorry to everybody.
I guess God just keeps fixing you along the way.
Maybe. This one needs work. Look at this one.
I just want to point out that may make it a little difficult to retire because Eastgate is known for you as the pastor. And someday you want to retire. So we just have to, that's something I guess that I think about sometimes. And so we just have to trust God that he will work that out when it's time. Because I know you're tired.
Well, I also think that one of the things that may be behind this whole push in the spirit that I've sensed and that others have sensed as well, that we need to not make our singular focus the Sunday morning service.
Sure.
That may be part of it. I mean,
yeah.
It's, you know. I believe, I absolutely believe that the Holy Spirit is the one who is enlightening us and leading us through the scriptures.
Absolutely.
And that is not dependent on a singular personality to hear from the Holy Spirit. And so it's incumbent on all of us to be open to what you got going on there.
I'm so sorry.
I feel like you're going to fall over any second.
I had to take my slippers off. And I knocked the microphone. I'm so sorry. What you're saying was so
no,
good.
No, I get it. No, I mean, but nothing like getting your tootsies cool. So,
sorry.
Anyway.
But no, it's important what you're saying. And I think
whatever it was.
No. But having come from the crazy church, which was definitely leader centric,
right?
I think having left that, we were both like, there's one Holy Spirit, and he can inspire a lot of people. It's not dependent on a single person
exactly.
to like carry that message or
exactly.
that light. And I know people mean well when they compliment you, but it's sometimes a little unsettling if it feels like it's
well,
like
it's
you're
unsettling
the only one.
When I'm told I can't take a day off.
Yeah.
I can't take a Sunday off because
yeah.
we have to hear you. And that's
Yeah.
I just think that's bad thinking. Sorry. But I know, I doubt that the four of you who are listening to this would think like that.
This is our time to be able to say a few things maybe that you couldn't or wouldn't on Sunday morning. And I guess that just came up. I wasn't planning on it.
So that's something that you may not know about Eastgate, is that we started this. And the other thing maybe you don't know, although I don't know why you wouldn't know it, because I say it regularly, and that is that we never actually set out to start a church. Somebody was asking me the story of Eastgate the other day, and, you know, what brought you to Florida? Why did you come to Florida to plant a church? And I was like, oh, yeah, no.
And when and where did you go to seminary?
Yeah.
Sorry, that one.
That one still, I feel like a little 5-year-old. Every time somebody's talking about that, I feel like a little kid. I don't know what to say. I'm like, I don't know. I can count to 5.
You can hold your own with anyone that's graduated from seminary. You've done a lot of self-study. Nowadays, you can learn so much. Whatever you want to learn, I think you can learn.
Well, we do live in an amazing day and age where you have so much information at your fingertips. Now, you have to do due diligence on all of it, because there's a lot of things that you have to learn how to triangulate information from multiple sources to make sure that you're going down the right path.
So in other words, you should not follow like just someone's tweet and take it as gospel truth.
I think that would be wise. But everybody's got to make up their own mind about how they're going to pursue that.
Well, in lighter things, something else people may not know.
Because this was pretty heavy.
I realize it got heavy real quick. Something people may not know about you is you also got a really fun gift for Christmas that you've been working on in the garage. I thought you might want to talk about that for a second.
Interesting. So, yeah. So, okay, I'm a child of the 60s and 70s. And when I was growing up, and you've heard, you know, imagine an old, this is a meme in the making here or whatever, but when I was growing up, but we had what we called electric football.
Yeah.
That was our Madden. And there was not nearly the kind of control or anything, but it was very tactile. It was very, you had this green metal board that would vibrate, and you had these little players with little platforms on them that had small little prongs, plastic prongs coming out that would cause them to vibrate and move down the field, supposedly. Mm-hmm. I never could, as a kid, it never made any sense. Everybody would just bunch up in the middle or spin around in circles, and nothing really ever happened. So I just happened to be, I don't know how I even came across it.
I
cannot remember for the life of me how I ever came back across this, but apparently, well, not apparently, I found out that there was a company, Tudor Games, that makes electric football games still. And they've kind of upgraded the technology. It's not metal anymore. It's not nearly as loud.
There's tons of YouTube videos.
Yeah, and these guys like take this really seriously. And it's kind of interesting because there really was I don't know if there was back then, but there is now a pattern and a way to go about playing that does kind of emulate football more than what it did as I understood it as a kid.
And yeah, I've watched you play it, and there's some strategy to it. And
there is.
Yeah, and it's really fun.
It's a lot of fun. But, of course, for me, as is usual, I got a little more excited about taking the little figures, the little football guys, and customizing them and painting faces on them. And then I bought add-on things, little face masks that you can paint, and you bend around their faces and glue on. And if you could see the size of these things, it's unbelievable. For me, a person whose hands shake as badly as they do and who has so little patience for anything.
And needs glasses for up-close things. Well, one of the things you ordered with the football players was a magnifying glass that, like, attached to
the
table.
It's a little soldering thing that you a magnifying glass, but it works perfectly for these guys. So I got miniature brushes and I have fun with it. But it's a nice little hobby. It's fun.
Really cute. I shouldn't say cute. That you would not like
cute.
That.
That's fine. It's whatever.
Well, I was just thinking we should post a picture of it. No, well, you ordered some specific football teams.
Yeah.
And you made like the guy's knees dirty, and it was really cool. I put numbers on them and things like that.
It's fun. I have a lot of fun with it. But yeah, I got the Jaguars and I got the Colts, of course, and then I got the Chicago Bears. The game came with, the kids got it for me for Christmas.
Yeah,
it was so
sweet.
You put
it on your wish list. And
it came with the Atlanta Falcons and the Denver Broncos. But I'm putting them off till later. I'm customizing the teams that I really like.
Yeah.
First.
Well, you can put them against the teams you like.
Exactly. That's what I plan on doing.
You need some bad guys.
Exactly.
They're not bad.
I never think of any of those teams as bad guys. I don't. Oh, boy.
Yeah, speaking of that, that just made me think what we've been watching lately. One of the new things we've been watching.
And okay, so you're saying we're transitioning over to things that we're watching.
Oh, what did you want to say?
No, that's fine.
I thought we were on the same page.
No, we weren't. Okay. We were talking one of those rare moments out of 30 whatever years. What were you going to say?
I was going to transition to AAF football, but you go ahead with what you were going to say.
That. Oh, let's talk about that. Let's AAF football. I want to watch it. I got a game recorded. Yes. AAF football. Allied American football or American Alliance. American Alliance football.
Oh.
And it's professional football. It's not supposed to be a rivalry to the NFL. They're looking at it more like a farm team, more like the way baseball has a minor league.
Yeah.
And, man, is it fun. It's just been, you know, of course, the announcers, it depends on what channel it's on, and the announcers are not great, and sometimes
slightly amateurish.
Sometimes the camera's way off, like the camera gets fooled a lot by misdirection.
It's the B
plays.
Team,
yeah, but it's still it's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it. And the Salt Lake City, what are their names?
Team,
yeah, it's a brand new league, so I don't remember.
There's only like 8 teams, right?
Yeah, I think there's only 8 teams. Mm-hmm. And the team from Salt Lake, their main quarterback, his name is Josh
Woodrum.
Woodrum.
Oh, I stole your thunder.
That's okay.
Sorry.
It's all good. But yeah, Josh Woodrum. So it's a lot of fun to say, Woodrum dropped back. I need to record that somewhere.
What was one of the first things he did, though, once he started playing?
He got injured. Because
typical Woodrum fashion.
Yeah. So anyway. But yeah,
So if you didn't get quite enough football.
Yeah, the AAF, you look for it on your listings. It's a lot of fun. I've been watching... I was just looking at it at first. I was like, what is this? I don't know what this is. Steve Spurrier, if you're a Florida fan, which, of course, I am not.
No.
So, I mean, it made it very difficult, but I've still been kind of rooting for the Orlando Apollos, and he's coaching that. Mike Singletary is
and
coaching.
And if you're a Bears fan, which you should be, yes. That's really cool.
Mike Singletary is coaching the Memphis team. Mm-hmm. There's a smattering of
familiar
names, just like you mm-hmm. would get in a minor league team. Yeah. You know, and sometimes these guys are just trying to find slots in the NFL. So a lot of them are like college guys that didn't get picked up right away, but are out there. And so since they know they're being scouted, these guys are playing hard.
They're playing their hearts out. And they're young, too. You know, it's not like old guys put out to pasture. It's young guys fighting for a job. It's kind of what I was wondering what it was going to be. And then I saw that it was these young guys out of college that didn't get drafted. They have some different rules. You have to watch it to see. But one of my favorite things is when there's a replay, they have a live camera on the ref up in the booth.
Yeah.
And you see him and hear him talking and about the play. And
you're actually observing the entire decision process as it goes down. It's a pretty cool thing. I love the transparency.
There we go. Now we're on the same page.
Now we are. Now we are. Got it. But since we're on football, I mean, shall we just talk sports or
let's do it. The other thing we watch that we've been watching lately, and this is only thing that makes it a little hard for me to watch AAF with, you know, rapt attention, is that it's preseason baseball time.
Oh, yes.
So I've kind of shifted gears to sunny, beautiful green grass.
Yeah. And
outdoor.
We watched the Marlins play. We've watched them lose two of their preseason. Actually, I don't know. Were they losing in that game that I walked away from against Tampa Bay?
I don't think there was any score yet.
Oh, okay. Well, they lost their first game against the Cardinals, so that was rough. And we haven't been able to see a Cubs preseason game yet because they haven't been televised here. So.
Yeah, that's really frustrating.
But we've got a vested interest in the Marlins now since
we do.
Our son Bradley works for them.
Yes, and we're planning a trip later this week to go visit my grandson, but his dad kind of hangs
there.
Out with him.
Yeah, he
so
lives
we'll
there
see
with,
him too.
With my son, yeah.
Yeah. And we actually, honestly, I'll always plan these trips around baseball games. And there's a couple preseason games that we'll be able to catch while we're there, and which is just in walking distance from where he lives since he works for the Marlins. And
that'll be a lot of fun.
Looking forward to that.
That'll be a lot of fun. But in football news, I just wanted to point out that Charisma Magazine, and I don't read Charisma Magazine, but. Charisma Magazine ran an article that says Patriots quarterback Tom Brady credits his wife Giselle with their latest Super Bowl win. Specifically, he credits the former Victoria's Secret Angels witchcraft. She said, "You're lucky to be married to a witch. It's just that I'm a good witch," Brady said of his wife's spirituality. So then it goes into this whole thing about how she's had him doing the series of crystals that he has to hold at different times things he's had to eat and things to, because she said he was going to win. She forecasted he would win, but it would take a lot of work and a lot of witchcraft. So there it is.
Tell us something we don't know.
So go ahead, Patriots fans. Not only that, other things about the Patriots in the news, which we probably don't even need to discuss, which is just horrific.
Ugly and awful.
But anyway, so there's that. So there you go. Hilarious. Any God-fearing person knows better.
It's obvious whose side the Lord is on, and it's not theirs.
He did let them win the Super Bowl.
It's so annoying.
I don't think God cares about the Super Bowl. I think that's the bottom line.
Well, he didn't this year, that's for sure. But other stuff we've been watching, we watched a few series on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watched one that you haven't seen yet.
And I was left out of this.
I'm a comic book artist, and I like cartoons. I've never gotten over it. I doubt that I'm the only 50-something year old guy that still watches cartoons regularly. If they were on Saturday mornings, I would totally be there watching them. I'd watch them with my kids the whole time they were growing up.
My stepdad, who lives with us, by the way, would watch them with you. He was a comic book artist or
cartoonist.
He was a cartoonist, and he used to draw cartoons on my lunch sack that I'd take to school with me. And sometimes there were little illustrations of me walking around and kind of like a Rube Goldberg kind of a story type thing of progressive things going on. I loved them. I saved some for a long time, but I don't have any now. But anyway, I bet he would watch them with you.
Yeah, he probably would.
I remember my mom one time saying, I told her you were watching cartoons. She goes, wait, he does? He chucked us too.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah, she did. She was worried about it. And I said, I got over that a long time ago.
Wrong there. So anyway, so on Netflix, there's an original series called The Dragon Prince.
Yes.
And it's like it's fantasy genre. You know, it's got the whole mix of things like that. But animation.
A little bit of a sense of humor, too.
Sense of humor. It's done by the same people that did Avatar. And it's just a fun storyline. Honestly, if anybody wanted to be bored by it, I could sit down and go over all the parallels that you see in terms of the gospel narrative and the stories that go on with that. But beyond that, it's just a fun story. It's great characters. It's interesting character development. And mm-hmm. the story isn't – it's a linear story, but it's not taking predictable paths. And that's always fun, which especially is unusual for your young adult stories, cartoons, things like that. So
yeah, I just caught the last couple episodes, and during those I went, wait, how come I was left out of this?
I didn't think you wanted to see a cartoon.
That's okay. It looked really good, and maybe one day we'll rewatch them all together. But also along comic book lines, you've also they've been on. I've been glancing up. I'm also working on my laptop at the same time, but Punisher season 2,
yeah,
I caught a lot of that, and he is one dude, sorry.
You can't say that.
I said it. He's awesome, though.
But that's a fun story. But
very violent.
It's very violent. So we're not recommending. I'm not recommending Punisher to anybody just because there's a lot of violence, and I don't know what it's simulated. It's comic book stuff, but it's
And the guy who plays Punisher originally was in The Walking Dead. That's where I first saw him.
Yes.
And I came to really like him then. When they first came out with The Walking Dead, they picked actors and actresses that looked just like comic books. And I was reading the graphic novels with you. And so I kind of felt like I knew him when he first came on, but he died fairly early in the series. And so he's the guy playing Punisher, but he does an excellent job.
Yeah, he does. He doesn't look like Punisher as far as I'm concerned about the way he was. John Romita Sr. Mm-hmm. was the one who drew him originally. And he doesn't look like the way the Punisher should look, but he follows through. I mean, the character is written pretty close. They changed some of the origin concepts and stuff, but mm-hmm. it's pretty close.
So that's for all you comic book nerds out there. Yeah. Also, Resident Aliens, what's that?
Well, that's a book. I mean, that's books.
Oh, that's a book. That's right.
On Netflix.
That's right. That's a book you've been reading. Sorry.
Yeah. Are we talking about that then, too?
We can, yes.
Have you been reading? What have you been reading lately?
I've been reading Netflix, and I listen to podcasts still. Actually, before we get to Resident Aliens too, I was going to mention both Janelle. Everybody teases me about watching and loving true crime. I can't help it. I do. I'm not interested.
True crime TV shows. She doesn't mean like going out
stuff.
And watching real
no,
crime.
No, in fact, a lot of times if it gets too specific in terms of the graphic and nature of the crime, I just skip that. I don't really care about that part. I just care about how they catch the bad guy. But Janelle told me about a series on Netflix, The Ted Bundy Tapes, which is about the reporter who recorded Ted Bundy while he was in Florida prison. And they play a lot of the tapes of him describing, you know, how he got away with a lot of what he did. And so anyway, I've been listening to those or watching those. And then the other thing that my other daughter told me about was as a series on Netflix called Tidying Up, which is very fun. I love it. I've only seen one so far. I've actually only seen one of each of those, but I'm working on getting through those. Tidying Up is a dubbed series because the main character doesn't speak English and she has a translator there, but she goes into people's homes and helps them kind of straighten up all their messes, their physical messes. I mean, like if they just have clothes everywhere and the messy garage and their kitchen's out of control, and she sits down with them and works through their issues and helps put everything in order, which is another thing I love, is organization.
Yes. Very nice.
So that's really fun for anyone else that likes that kind of thing. And then you're reading Resident Alien. Did we mention that last time, though?
I don't think so. And then, yeah, I've been reading this book that Stan Lacane actually went out and purchased for me, called Resident Aliens by Stanley Hauerwas and William H. Willimon. Apparently, it was written back in the 80s. Everybody who knows anything has already read it. I've never read it. I can't believe it took me so long. It's an amazing book. It's an amazing work looking at the confessional church and where the church has kind of gone askew in trying to adopt the Constantinian methods of hoping that the state will bring about the kingdom of God.
So some light reading.
It's actually not heavy reading. I mean,
Well, Blake's been talking about it on his podcast because he's been reading it too. He was saying he just has to read little sections at a time and just kind of ruminate, just think about what he's read for a while. And so I guess that's...
It's definitely a book that will make you do that. It's definitely a book that will challenge a lot of our preconceived ideas about the purpose of the church or what, you know, especially for us who live in a country like we do. In the United States, where we have the freedoms that we have, and there's a tendency, and there has been a tendency, and this is nothing new, I've talked about this all the time, to assume that our role in this is to try to get the state to pass the laws that we want to make this a moral place. And my quote has always been, the thing that I've always said is that we've never been put on a moralist task of coercing the unwilling into adopting our convictions. That's never been our course. Our course has been that of reconciliation, reconciling people to Jesus and seeing how Jesus changes people. Not that we don't want to have a country that has good laws, and not that we don't want to participate by voting and doing the things that are part of our responsibilities as citizens. But what are our expectations as the church? Where are we looking? What are we thinking is going to be the hope and the solution for the kingdom of God?
That is interesting, because I do feel like the church so often gets enamored with the concept of legislating morality. Like, that's our duty, that's our role. And not that's a bad thing, but I worry that, excuse me, that that's like, they think that's the only thing. And obviously, the morality, you can change laws and that kind of thing, but that's not changing a person's heart. So
exactly. And we've been called on a mission to change people's hearts. And so that would, if we were to look at it from that perspective, what would that change in terms of how we approach our politics? And understanding that it's not that the church doesn't have politics or that it's not political. Right. It's very political, but it's not in the Constantinian sense. It's not, we're not political with Caesar.
Yeah.
Our politics transcend this and are of a different kingdom altogether. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's really important.
Absolutely.
And then I listen to a podcast, believe it or not, I do, called The Bible Project. And if you've seen their videos and all, I'm sure.
I think we mentioned them in one of our early podcasts.
I think we have, and I still recommend them. And they've got a podcast as well called The Bible Project Podcast. And so listening to that has really opened my eyes up to a lot of things that I was formerly unaware of. And there's a book that they were talking about called The Unseen Realm by Michael Heiser. And it's a book that is pretty much blowing my mind right now. It's the opening of the book is the author is talking about how he was at a conference at some point, and he was talking to a guy right before the teaching was supposed to start, and the guy just said, you know, at some point, read Psalm 82 and really read it and ask yourself what it is that you're seeing there. And so then he quotes, you know, God, Elohim, sits among the takes counsel and sits among the council of the Elohim, of the gods.
Wow.
And you know, as a person who's been raised in a monotheistic world, all of a sudden you're looking at this, and I mean, everything we know about the Jewish faith, about the Christian faith, is all about monotheism. But this is not necessarily talking about other gods. It's a fascinating look into the way that the ancients looked at these things, understood the world beyond the seen world, and the things that they used to try to describe it. They're not talking about other gods, but they are talking about spiritual beings,
wow,
which inhabit this whole tableau of existence that's beyond what we're able to perceive. That's how the scriptures describe it put it. And it's so much more complex. It's so much more in depth than I was ever taught. My whole life, I was never. And this guy, you know, was a seminary teacher, was a Hebrew scholar, and he was trying to figure out how come he'd never actually read this before, and how he'd never come across these things before. And it put him on a track where he began studying this and tracing it down in the languages. And that's just always fascinating to me, to just scratch another layer of dust away and get another clearer picture of the amazing God that we serve and know.
Absolutely. There's layers. I just feel like there's so many layers to God's word.
Yeah, it is. It's incredible.
You talked about that a little bit on Sunday, about the hubris of the Western culture and society, how we feel so smart and we feel like we've evolved and spiritually and practically in every way. And as you were even saying that, I remember thinking, yeah, our primitive ancestors who built the pyramids, and we're not even sure how they did that. So exactly. They were so much smarter than them.
Exactly.
But that's awesome. That's not a thing.
That's not a thing.
What is it?
They say it's a thing, but it's not. It's not a thing.
And what is it?
Well, you know how oftentimes, like, if there's not many people that show up at church, and the favorite thing for a pastor to say to make himself feel better about the fact that there's not many people there is to say, well, it says right there in Matthew 18:20, where two or more are gathered in my name, there I am in the midst of them.
Is that wrong?
Well, we usually use that in the context of saying, you know,
two is better than one.
Yeah, two is better than one. N.T. Wright makes a great point that it has to be at least two. There's the point that he makes in that is that singular, the idea of the lone wolf singular Christianity does not work, because you got to have at least two. It's a minimum, bare minimum of two before you got this sense of church community or something going
on.
Most of the time we're using that to try to feel like it's okay if just a handful of us are gathering together, we're here to worship, and he's here in our midst to do this. The only difficulty with that, and it's one of those things, it's probably, I should put a caveat, it's not totally a thing is what I should say,
okay.
Is because, yeah, in principle, that would be correct. You could say, yes, in principle, he's here, it doesn't matter how many of us are gathered, but the context of that scripture is not about getting together for a worship service or a teaching or anything like that. It's clearly in the context of dealing with a wayward person in the community.
Oh, wow.
It's all about actually judgment.
It's all that?
Not judgment in a final sense, but of determining what's right or wrong in
judging righteous judgment.
Yeah, exactly. In a person's behavior, conduct, or whatever, or treatment of another individual. And so Jesus was saying, listen, you've got the authority to make decisions, hard decisions. And you can do this because if just a couple of you are there discerning these things, I'm going to be there in the middle of it with you.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that. Confirming
what it is that you do. So, you know, it's not totally a thing to say that, you know, when only four people show up to the church service, we feel it. When the four people who listen to the podcast show up to the church service, we can say, well, two or more gathered, that's what it's about. And I guess it's still right in principle, but it's not really quoting that scripture in the way that it was originally represented and in the way that it originally finds its meaning.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well,
it makes sense.
And now you do. And that's why I'm here, to inform you.
I'm so glad you are here. Keep
so
it straight.
So that five other people besides myself are aware of this.
That's good. And it goes along with that other verse that talks about if your brother's offended you, bring him.
Yeah. Yeah, it is all, it's all right, in that whole context. It's in that exact same context. It's in Matthew 18 there. So
I think that just makes practical sense. Well, it's all the way around.
It is. It's a very pragmatic way of going about resolving issues within the community, and Jesus letting us know that you can do this. You don't actually have to break up and fall apart in these whole things. You can actually resolve these things because I'm there guiding you. I'm there in the midst of this, giving you the discernment you need to make righteous judgment. That was his point.
That's awesome. And I think that's an important direction for the church to go. And having that principle and believing that principle and acting on it keeps it, like, makes your job a little easier if people do that. And I honestly feel like people do at Eastgate. I don't feel like they come to you with a million little things, that a lot of that is worked out on their own and in groups. And
they don't. And honestly, and there have been people who have left Eastgate who I still appreciate and respect.
Absolutely.
Who had disagreements with me, but it wasn't like they left and got angry and made a stink about it. They came to me and talked to me about it. And we dialogued back and forth and we did our best to try to resolve it. We couldn't. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's, you know, we hold our convictions and we see our, from our particular perspective.
Sure.
But we're going to, follow our faith differently than each other at that point. I don't know. I think that's the best way to go about something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I applaud anybody who's willing to do that.
I do too.
Discuss it and dialogue with it.
I always appreciate that.
In any of those cases, it's never been a fight. It's never been.
And I know you have said to maybe all of them something to the effect of, if things ever change, of course, we'd love to have you back.
Yeah, absolutely.
At any time. And there's a friendship and a handshake and that kind of thing.
Which is, to me, the way it always should be resolved.
Yes, I agree.
So, since that's not a thing, what is a thing? Like, you got a quote or anything? Don't we do that? We quote things around here. What are we quoting? You got a quote for me, Robbie.
Okay. I have one of my favorite quoters. No. One of my favorite people to quote is C.S. Lewis. And I saw this and I liked it. It says, "Surely what a man does when he is taken off his guard is the best evidence of what sort of man he is." And I guess when I read that, I thought about back to the hurricane and how we really saw people rise to that challenge. And
it's true.
Oh my gosh. And we talked about it last time too. So I hate to bring up again and be repetitive, but a lot of the young men that just, before we even got home, where Quinn was one of them. And I think we talked about that too. And we were just like, "How's our house? Can you check?" And he was like literally driving however he could and wherever he could to get to people's homes
to check
over
on
tree trunks and tree branches and that kind of thing to let us know your house is okay. Here's a picture of it. And I don't know that I just thought of that when I read that quote.
Yeah. That when there's nothing out there to try to put a show on for, you're actually getting a good view of what we're really like anyway.
Yes.
Which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad he only applied that to men. So women get to do whatever they want.
We are off the hook.
You know what, Robbie? Sometimes I have trouble with money. Sometimes I don't know what to do. Like, I barely can count. And so I wonder if you have any sort of advice to people when it comes to finances. Do you have anything for a money minute of any kind?
I do. It may again be repetitive, but this is how we learn. So I just thought of this again because it's a new year, and I just want to encourage anybody that feels like they're, dogged. Nope. Feels they're brought down by their finances or feels discouraged by that in any way, that it's a new year. It's a new beginning. And don't be discouraged. Start over.
Yay. All our debts are forgiven. It's a new year, right?
Well, we can start over, and really it comes down to behavior modification. Again, I know I've said all this before, but It's just good to remember, I think, and be reminded of it, that we need to change our behavior. It's not about how much money you make. It's about what you're doing with what you have. And also to remember that delayed gratification is an adult trait, something we need to learn as adults. As kids, you know, we want what we want when we want it. And honestly, we're the same as adults. We just have to learn to...
But as adults, we learn how to restrain that or corral that into... Yes. Into its proper expression.
And delay does not mean denial. And one thing we've done that has helped, and it's actually been encouraging to go back and look at, I'm a big fan of spreadsheets, and you know that. Mm-hmm. But either a Google Doc, or you can do it on pen and paper, however you want. But I made categories, made a wish list of different things that we want and need, honestly. Some of them were just things we really needed. And I put them in categories like under $100, under 500, you know, between 1 and 500, and then 500 to 1,000,
yeah.
And then 5,000, 10,000, or something like that. And then I just started listing the things that we want, just anything that came to mind. This is stuff that we really need. And they were as simple as, we need a new vacuum cleaner, we need to paint the bathrooms, mostly stuff around the house, need a new car, whatever. And that goes in the big category.
Need new
category.
Action figures for a football game.
You can put whatever you want on there. And there was something about seeing it on a list that helped me, feel like, okay, this is real, this is important to me. It had to be important enough to put down on that list.
Yeah,
and
that's a good point.
As we got them one by one, you know, I'd highlight them or cross them off or something like that. And it's been encouraging to go back and look, and over half of what we've put on that list has been done, and some way sooner than I ever expected. We ended up getting several of those things kind of knocked off after the hurricane, which one of them was a new roof we needed on our house. And
thank
our insurance,
you, insurance
covered that. That's
thank
right.
you, Michael.
So that could be a help too, to realize that just because you want it, you can't get it today, doesn't mean you're never going to get it. It's just on that list, and it has to earn its place in your life. And you learn to prioritize what's more important and do those important. You can't get it all at once. That's just the way it is. Even if you had $1 million, you couldn't get it all at once.
That's
so.
Right. And I'll tell you something that is on a different side than just a spreadsheet side, is that I know that there were a lot of times when we didn't have finances in order,
mm-hmm.
that I would struggle with it, worrying that this was a character defect. Like, aww. What's wrong with me? Why can't I do this? And once you come to the realization that, no, this isn't about character. It's not that. It's about habit. Mm-hmm. And it's about just learning to recognize patterns that are not healthy. And that's going to apply to anything in
that's
life.
That's right. That, self-control is a trait we all need in every aspect of our lives.
That's right. And because one of the things that I believe that our enemy does to keep us into any bad habit that may be plaguing our lives is to keep us in this realm of shame. One of the things that Jesus did was to bring us out of it. He lifted us up from that. Mm-hmm. And when we believe and embrace the truth that's found there in Colossians, that he triumphed over our enemy and on the cross, that there's nothing that our enemy holds on us anymore. So the thoughts that go through our minds, you know, this is a character defect, this is a problem with me, why can't I get it together? Those are not our thoughts per se. Those are not God's thoughts. There's something else at work here. There's somebody else feeding us a narrative that we need to not embrace.
That's right.
Recognize. Just step back and look at it pragmatically and say, you know what? This has got to change. It's a habit. I got to change. It's a way I've gone about life that I just need to trust that God's going to give me the ability to approach differently.
That's right. I think recognizing we're human and
right.
we're flawed that's a good thing, but it shouldn't discourage us right. or make us feel like we're terrible people. Just realize that, okay, it's a fight to keep
right.
that bad habit or whatever.
That's right.
The lust of the flesh as the Bible talks about, you know.
Psalm 103 tells us that he remembers our frame, or he remembers how we're made. He knows that we're made out of mud.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that there's a frailty and a weakness to us as human beings.
Right.
But that's not an indicator that somehow we're not valuable, or that our character is somehow damaged to the point that we're not able to do these things.
Absolutely. And I think, like, even along those lines, it's important to be honest with God. Obviously, he already knows. We know that logically. But just say, I really want this thing, and it's owning me. And I don't like that. I don't want it to owe me. And just say, you know what it is, God, or whatever the situation is. And I just feel like he hears us, and he understands, like you say, we're made of dust, and what our interests are, and how we're constantly drawn away from spiritual to physical things. And
right.
that's just part of being human. And honestly, American, there's so much that
we got
have.
More free time on our hands. Probably
we do.
Than anybody
way too
on
much.
The planet. So mm-hmm. that doesn't help.
Yeah, exactly.
What else do we talk about in this thing, Robbie?
We're out of words.
Can I go now? I want to go back and play with my electric football game.
And watch AAF. I know it.
All right. Well, I guess that's it. So on behalf of Robbie, we've enjoyed spending this time here with you and talking to the four of you.
Thanks.
I'm sorry. I hope you got a good nap at least in the process of all of this.
Unless you're driving.
Yeah. Phew. I hope you weren't driving while you listened to this. That would be dangerous. We should have some sort of a warning label on this podcast. Please do not listen to while you drive. This is hazardous. This is a problem. So this is Eastgate, learning to love God, learning to love others.
This is our story so far.
We'll see you next time. God bless you.
God bless you.
Music for the Wonder What podcast was written and performed by Scott Holmes, Derek Clegg, Pharaohs, and Ryan Anderson from the Free Music Archive.
You got really loud there.
Well, I got mad.
Don't get mad, get loud.